You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is Matt Doyle, and you're listening to And the Award Goes To.
It's a look back at Broadway's most magical night, and all of the winners reminisce with delight. With their talent and brilliance, they always impress. And the Tony goes to my special guest.
Have you ever dreamed of winning a Tony Award? Did you ever practice your Tony acceptance speech in the bathroom mirror? Did you grow up watching the Tony Awards every year? Do you have a collection of Tony Award shows on VHS tape that you refuse to throw out? Well, then this is the podcast for you. Every week, I interview your favorite Tony Award winners, and together we go down memory lane as my guests share intimate and never-before-shared details about their Tony experience. By the end of every episode, you're going to feel like you just won a Tony. Welcome to And the Tony Goes To. I'm your host, Ilana Levine. Welcome today's Tony winner, Matt Doyle.
Oh my goodness. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you to the American Theater Wing and the Broadway League and to all of the beautiful men in my category. My God, you brilliant, brilliant men. Thank you so much to my team, Erica Tuckman and Tim Marshall, and to everyone at the Jacobs Theater, the staff, the crew, the stage management, and my company, my beautiful family. We have been to hell and back together, and I love you all so much. To Atai Benson, my wonderful Paul, and my real life Paul, Max Clayton, I love you. I don't know what I'd do without you, and you really do leave love notes all over the place, and you die. I cannot believe what you put up with. Thank you so much to Marian Elliott and Chris Harper for your friendship and your guidance and your support over the years in changing my life. Thank you to my earliest teachers, Marilyn, Judy, Britt, Eric, Richard, Beth. Thank you to my family, my sisters, Leah and Colleen, and my parents who believed in me pursuing my passion and believed in the arts and believed that the only way I would be happy is to live my life authentically. Thank you so much to George Firth and to Stephen Sondheim. Stephen, thank you for allowing your work to evolve and allowing more people to be seen in your genius. Thank you so much. I'm the next bride!
Matt.
It's so surreal.
Tell me everything.
I'm like convinced that that's like computer generated, you know, that's not real.
Someone made that for you for your birthday?
Yeah, somebody made it for me. It's like one of those deep fakes, you know, and they put my face on someone else, and isn't that hilarious? It's still just so surreal and so strange to watch that because it feels so recent and does, like, in my consciousness, like, I do know that that happened. I accept that as reality. I see the trophy and I know that that's real, but at the same time, I'm like, that, like, I don't remember any of that. Everybody thought I rehearsed that speech, which I'm very, like, thrilled that it went as well as it did. But I remember sitting in my seat right beforehand, and I had a list of names that I wanted to go through. And I was like, I'll hit these names throughout the speech. I have to end with Sondheim. I have to say these names, you know. And I actually wasn't rehearsed at all. And right before they, like, said my name, I was like, oh my gosh, what if I just fall flat on my face And I went up there. Something happened. I know I screamed, "I'm the next bride" at the end. And then I ran off and people were like, "Wow, you must have rehearsed that speech for days." I was like, "No, I swear to God, that was like psychotic stream of consciousness, like just everything coming out at once." I have no idea how that managed to be any way, shape or form, you know, coherent at all.
And articulate and emotional and kind of groundbreaking. It was all the things. The extraordinary, you know, thing about that show is how unbelievably fresh and current your production was. And I want to, you know, obviously the Sondheim of it all, right? Like Sondheim was still alive when you began doing the show. And we had lost him, I believe, when you accepted your Tony that night. And I wonder if you can talk about, I mean, we're going to get into how you were cast in the show and your history of the show, but sort of working backwards, talk about the Sondheim of it all. Talk about that.
Absolutely. You know, so we were pretty heavily involved with Sondheim in the first half of the process in 2020. And he was in the room with us constantly and making sure that his words were respected and making sure that it evolved in an appropriate way, in a way that he was comfortable with. But he was also so open to new ideas. And that's something that I really respected about him in his older age, because I knew Sondheim during the Sweeney Todd off-Broadway, the very, very teeny Sweeney that we did. And he was around a lot for that. And he loved that production so much. He embraced it so much because it was fresh and it was new. And people were listening to his words in a different way and excited by them again. And I appreciated that he wasn't, you know, he didn't want his pieces to be museum pieces. And that's what was so exciting about him, is he just appreciated creativity and art and people, being inspired by what he had created and wanting to create more with it. And he was sharp and just so present when we were first working on it. And then when we came back from the pandemic, I think a lot of us knew that he was A, not healthy, but also we didn't want to get him sick. We were still so terrified of COVID at that time. And we certainly didn't want him to be exposed or out of his apartment in any way. We wanted him to be able to see the production again. And we had him there on the first preview. He was elated. He said it was the most entertaining night of theater he'd ever had in his life. And he just was so thrilled to see with what it had become, and said to me that night that that line, "I'm the next bride," is the most important line in the show to him because of what it represents. It's not only his favorite exit line in a musical ever, but also now coming from the perspective of a gay man, to hear that screamed and to hear it, you know, shouted to the rooftops, which is the only way he wanted it, was a really, I think, emotional experience for him. And then he passed just 5 days later. It was, I think, the hardest blow throughout that entire process, just because we had worked so hard to bring it back and we were hanging on to it with so much emotion and passion. And to walk into that space, to present it to him, to have him love it, and then to lose that genius just a few days later was just really shocking. But I'm so grateful he got to see it.
You know, when we think about Sondheim, his private life was really private. It wasn't something he shared a lot about. I think for most people, you know, didn't know he had a husband and sort of didn't know about that part of his life.
Yeah.
And so what a remarkable thing for him, who is so private, to sort of then embrace and just love the idea that his story could be shared in this way. And what a remarkable thing in one's lifetime to see this piece reinvent itself in this way and for him to get to see it. How did the conversation about the sort of switching Amy to Jamie, was that already a part of the production when they did it in London?
It was a part of the production in London. So Jonathan Bailey of now yes. Bridgerton fame and everything actually played the role out in the UK. But it was a tough conversation. It was the last piece of the puzzle in terms of the gender swaps. Marianne really didn't want to lose another incredible female character in a very right. feminist production. And Sondheim also struggled with a lot of, I think, characters becoming gay in this piece because for so long he was just annoyed with the notion that so many people and scholars of his work had built around the idea that mm-hmm. Bobby was gay. Not that Bobby right. couldn't be gay, but and they actually even tried it in a production once. But I think when so many people over the years, if you've created something, yell at you and tell you that this is what you wrote when you in fact did not write that, it becomes a very frustrating and weird thing to hear. So I know that he like resisted tendencies to even make Bobby in this production a lesbian or bisexual, you know, just because he was like, I just want to get rid of that notion. This like this bizarre theory that, you know, people have written as fact when there's no fact, you know, that was never written that way. And he's like, it's just, I'm sure it just frustrated him from just a perspective of yeah. like, no, I wrote this. You don't know what you're talking about. And I think so. I think there was some resistance of, you know, exploring the sexuality of these characters too much. And then he thought about it. And I mean, there's actually public emails now of Marianne and Sondheim back and forth that they published in the New York Times. And you can see this, this whole discussion going back and forth. And he says, you know, I think that this could actually be show-stopping and a really exciting way to add a really important thing into our piece, which is obviously homosexuality and gay men, and give a male actor a chance to have this show-stopping moment. And that's exactly what it turned into. And it was actually, in the end, I think, his way in, because he realized that the commentary on gay marriage was really important. Yeah. To explore.
So I know that you had done War Horse, and so you had a relationship with yeah. Marianne Elliott, the director. Tell me how this job of Company came into your life.
So I had not been talking to Marianne, and you know, we were really close during War Horse, and you know, she went back to the UK. Time happens. You see each other occasionally at parties and you say, oh God, I miss you. We have to catch up. But I hadn't been talking to her in a while and I knew that they were casting for Company. And I just thought to myself, well, you know, if she thought I was right for something, she would have called me in. And at the very last minute, they were having final callbacks and they decided to bring me in for Paul, the character that Jamie is terrified to be married to. And I said to them, you know, I really just don't think I'm a Paul. I think I'm more of a Jamie, and I just don't want to waste your time. I know you're probably going to cast some big star as Jamie. It did very well for Jonathan Bailey over in the UK. So I understand if you don't want to see me for Jamie, but that's the role I should read for. And Marianne said, no, please just come in for Paul. And I was about probably 20 seconds into my audition, and she stopped me, and she said, oh God, you're right. You are a Jamie. And she decided to make me learn Getting Married Today on the spot in the room. And I did the first verse for them there. And then she said, don't worry, we'll bring you back. But she gave me 24 hours with the material. And I learned the entire song overnight. It was the opening of Moulin Rouge for my boyfriend. And I remember I couldn't go to the party and I was up like crying all night, you know, wondering how it was going to yeah. go, because it was such an important audition all of a sudden. And I went in the next day. It all just like came flying out of my mouth. And we worked on the material for about an hour, to the point that people in the room started laughing because it was like,
right, what's happening?
Rehearsing? Yeah. You know, like, what are we actually doing? We have other people outside. Yeah. It was so crazy. I was in there for so long. And, I left the room and Marianne and I have a really great chemistry. We understand each other. We know how to jab at one another in a really healthy and loving way and also get to each other's truth. And I think I felt that as soon as we were working together again. And it was just this moment, you know, when you get together with an old friend and you're having a conversation again and you realize, oh my God, it's so comforting to be in the presence of someone who just gets you.
That's incredible.
You know? And That's how it felt. Yeah. And so I left the room and I was like, oh God, oh God. And she sent me an email immediately saying that was so fun. And I was like, yeah. What does this mean? And I didn't hear anything for 5 days. And I was like, this
grueling.
Is, yeah.
Yeah.
I was losing my mind, but it was just because they were trying to get Sondheim to watch the tape to give his approval. And no one wanted to tell me that because had he said no, I would have carried that to my grave.
That would have been, I mean, we heard Matt Doyle left town and we don't know where he is. No, it would have been the worst. Did you actually learn it by heart by the time you went in the next day for the audition?
I probably knew part of me is everybody there because if everybody's there. That's probably all I knew because I'd been watching it for years and watching like my idols do this, you know, just brilliant women, but never.
Yeah,
exactly. But I never like it was not something I planned on doing ever. You know, it was not a role that I suspected I would take on. So you hear part of me is everybody there and then you just like watch,
yes.
You know, that's how you take in that song. I don't think anyone, except for maybe a few people who want a good party trick, like
or Broadway backwards
and,
or something.
Yes, exactly. So I didn't, you know, I loved the song. I loved watching performances of the song, but I really did not
know.
So
when you went to that callback, did you know it or were you holding the lyric sheet in your hands?
Oh, I put the lyrics down and Marianne went, oh God, are you serious? And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to try. And it like came out.
Once you got into the scene work or sort of, I assume it wasn't just working on the song because everyone saw like, okay, he has the breath control. He did not faint. He got it all out.
Yeah, certainly not about the musicality of the song. It was then breaking down what Marianne wanted to see and what I think made her version of that song so spectacular, aside from the staging and the set and everything about that was just such a showstopper. And I do really contribute so much of that to the collaboration of everyone involved.
The design was extraordinary.
It was so special. Yeah, exactly.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary, and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
But what Marianne knew is that most of the time it's been done as one kind of deadpan stream of thought, which is a brilliant way of delivering it. That's how Madeline Kahn did it. I worship that video, you know, like I think she's a genius. But Marianne really, really, really wanted to see each individual specific thought and also thought, you know, that would also add to the nervous breakdown and the fury and the kind of chaos if the actor has to play with intent every single individual thought at that speed. So that's the first thing we started to work on is if I could do lightning quick emotional changes at that speed on every single thought, because a thought changes, part of me is everybody there, new thought. Because if everybody's there, new thought. I want to thank you all for coming to the wedding, new thought. And it just flies by. And so I thought I looked absolutely insane. And I think I did, but I think that's what served
the piece emotionally so well. And comedically. All of it, right? All the things.
Yeah,
was
exactly.
Was that number something when you got to it each night? Because obviously there were many other things and scenes you had to do and sing throughout the show. Was that like, oh my God, it's coming? Oh my God, once this part of the show is over, I can enjoy my show? Or were you like, oh my God, I can't wait for it, it's coming? Like, which was it?
You know, it was always exciting. It was, yeah, it was exciting. It was always exciting. I actually wasn't, I was only afraid of it when we were doing previews in 2020. But I think I attribute that to fears that the pandemic really helped alleviate, which are really just kind of the sad fears of our industry. Like, what's Ben Brantley going to think? What are my friends going to think? What are the awful people who gossip around here going to think of me? This is such an important moment and role. Right. Am I going to screw it up? So those fears, I think, really held me back. And then you live through something like the pandemic, all of that lifts, you know? We're so lucky to be back. I found myself really just excited and grateful every night. And yes, I was very hard on myself if I screwed it up, and the screw-ups happened occasionally, and that's just who I am as a performer.
How have you learned to sort of let yourself be human and not a robot?
I'm still trying. Yeah, I'm still definitely working on that. That's the biggest thing that I have to accomplish. I think perfectionism is actually a real curse to a performer, especially in a role like that. Now, I needed it for the song, but I had to let go of it for the scene, and I had to allow myself to be in the scene and in the moment because it was such a tender and beautiful scene. There was one night where it was the last night of Tony Voters, and if any actor ever tells you Tony season's easy, they're lying to you. And I knew we had, you know, what, 20 voters in there for the final night trying to see it. It was a big night. And I had made it through all of Tony season thinking, you know, I feel good about my performances. And on that last night, I repeated a verse because I got lost. And I left the stage. I have never had an emotional breakdown like that at a theater before because all of that pressure finally just released. And I was so upset. And it was actually Miss Patti LuPone who pulled me aside. She came up to my dressing room and she grabbed me. And she was like, F this. This is so effing hard. This is ridiculous. It's ridiculous that we have to go through this. It is ridiculous what they put us under. It is ridiculous how much pressure we put on ourselves. And she just like let me yell about it with her. She didn't tell me get over it. She didn't try to tell me it's okay. You need to like, you know, snap out of this. She honored your feeling. She honored how hard it is because she's been through it so many times, and she understands that even though, yes, in reflection, I'm like, oh my God, that's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous how hard I took that, you know. She knew exactly what I was feeling. And I think those are the life lessons, is like the more I recognize that we are all going to be human and we're all going to have flaws like that, we're all going to have hangups like that, the easier they are to deal with. You know, and the more I can laugh at them.
I mean, what a cast, right? What was it like, sort of? Are there any things that you saw that you can kind of share about what it is watching Patti rehearse or Katrina rehearse these roles that, you know, like you, people had such a preconceived idea about, and so they both are taking them on and recreating them. Anything that you can share or lessons learned?
Well, hats off to Katrina Lenk because she was a rock and the most grounded and just giving performer I've ever worked with. She was so focused on us, on the storytelling, on developing Bobby past, a lot of, in my opinion, bullshit that she had to deal with preconceived notions about her role on both a acting level and a gender level and a vocal level. And she expanded until the very end. She grew until the very end. She discovered until the very end. And, you know, I say to everyone, if you want to go see an actual performance and what a performer is really capable of, don't go in previews. Don't go around opening when they're terrified of the press and all of the things that we were talking about earlier. Go closer to the end of their run once they have discovered so many layers and nuances. And I just was in awe of her. She took everything with so much grace and held such dignity throughout that whole process. And in my opinion, it was easily one of the best performances of last season. And then Patti... I mean, I had heard so many stories. We all have stories about Patti that we have before we even, you know, meet the woman. And she lived up to every expectation I had of her and more in the best ways. I just, absolutely adored her so much. She is my jam. I mean, I love someone who's blunt. I love someone who's unafraid. I love someone who makes mistakes and admits it and embraces them. And most importantly, I love someone who is there for the work and for the company. And that really surprised me with Patty. I knew she'd be there for the work, but I didn't know what she would be like as an ensemble member. But the woman was moving chairs in her 70s, right, you know, with the rest of us. She was all about the ensemble work. She made sure that she was a part of every group number. It blew me away. I mean, she's about the company. And that was the first thing first. She was about being a company member. And that's why she said it all the time. That's why I do theater. And it was stunning. And I felt so taken care of by her and appreciated.
You know, we are lucky. I don't know how it happened, but your Tony Nom morning and finding out your nomination is filmed. And
yes. Yes, Max filmed it, my partner. I know. And I had no idea. I was like, you.
He knew that you were going to be nominated.
I guess so. Oh, God. Could you imagine? I mean, I'm sure he would have deleted the video and never told me that he had done that. But like, he was pretty confident. Yeah.
So the world can see what that felt like for you in real time. It's such an incredible thing to get to watch someone's dream come true on film.
Yeah.
But can we talk a little bit about the night itself? You won a bunch of awards also, not just the Tony for this part. So you had some idea of what it would feel like to have your name called. But there really is, in our little piece of the planet, there really is nothing like the Tonys. It is just a different kind of award. Yeah. And it's the award you knew about growing up. What was it like? So first of all, who were you able to bring with your Tony tickets? Who were you able to have both seated next to you or somewhere in the auditorium on that night?
So seated next to me was my partner, Max. He came on my ticket. You get one.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tonys. And then my agent and manager actually bought seats next to me to be there with me, which was amazing. I had no idea. I knew they were going to be there, but I sat down next to them. And I was like, you guys.
they
were like, yes, I thought you knew that. And and my parents were able to buy tickets. So shows at the very end, once they've like sorted everyone out, shows usually get a pool and they do a lottery for those tickets. So we got those tickets in a pool, and I literally just walked up to our producers and I said, if you put my name in a lottery, I'm going to kill you. I was like, you give two tickets to my parents. Thank you very much. Yeah. I will pay for them and let's get this taken care of. So luckily my parents did get to come. They were only about, I think, like 20 rows back in the orchestra. I had no idea where they were seating. Otherwise I would have I would have yelled to
looked
them.
Looked around.
I just kind of stared out at that massive, vast audience. And, was so overwhelmed, but I felt very, very, grateful that
and,
I had so many people there.
And did you have a tux already? Did someone dress you and Max for the night? What happened with that?
So we actually went to Tom Ford and we both got our like absurd Tom Ford tuxes and they were wonderful to us there and took really good care of us. And I felt very, very appreciated. And I felt, you know, it was, I said to myself, no matter what happens, I have no idea when this will ever happen again. This is everything I've dreamt of. I'm going to go big or go home because come on, this is so wild. And for it to follow such a tragic and difficult time in all of our lives, I was like, this is the most positive, incredible, just wave of excitement that I have to just embrace it and go full out. So we went full out. We got Tom Ford tuxes. We had a jeweler give us jewelry for the night. So we were wearing diamonds and everything. I was like,
that's
let's
so
go.
Incredible.
This is so surreal.
You described sort of, you hear your name and it sounds like even when we were listening back to your speech just now that you have no, like you floated somehow up to the stage or you were like angels carried you up there. Like no, like no
it
memory
like
of getting from point A to point B.
No, I really like, I can't believe how fast it is when I watch it now. I'm like, oh my gosh. I mean, it literally, I think I proved to everyone that I am in fact, Jamie. That was just me up on stage. I remember that I did want to say I'm the next bride if it felt appropriate. And because it was, as I said, it was such an important line to Sondheim. And so many people, I think, were still confused as why I yelled that. I'm like, well, it's for me.
Before I let you go, when you talk about sort of, I just want to like circle back to young Matt for a second. When you said like the lifelong dream of it all. So can you just tell me like when was the moment in your childhood where it became clear that this was your dream?
Yeah. When I was in middle school, I was really, really, really badly bullied. And, you know, it went a little beyond, I think, like, oh, I was badly bullied. I was thrown in dumpsters. I was knocked out unconscious. It was physical bullying and all sorts of things. And I found a community in theater, and I found identity in theater. And I really quickly latched onto it as a result, because in so many ways it saved my life. It told me that I will be okay. As long as I stayed around these people, I was going to be okay. And I feel that even as an adult, even when there are moments where theater is the last thing I want to do sometimes, you know, and you wake up and I still, and I'll still come to work and be around the people and recognize, oh, this is why I'm here. It's the collaboration. It's the work. It's being around this. It's being excited by these ideas and by other people's ideas and others' talents and gifts. And I think it was right as soon as I discovered it, I made the statement, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. And then, you know, became more and more of a musical theater fan as time passed, and really started to understand the ins and outs of it and the Tonys, and became familiar with the idols that mattered to me. And Patty was certainly one of them.
What a full circle.
Yeah.
What a beautiful full circle moment.
Yeah.
Not only to win a Tony, but to win a Tony in a show with Patti LuPone, right? Like for it all to kind of.
Oh, outrageous. I remember giving my musical theater teacher, who kind of pulled me out of that and introduced it all to me, a mixtape of Patti LuPone. And so you remember when we all burned CDs, I did that for her. And I was like, Patti LuPone, she's really good. You should listen to her. And my teacher was like, yes.
There's someone named Liza I want to tell you about. You might find her a lot of fun also. Judy, just a bunch of gals.
Yeah. Exactly.
So if I ask you to kind of finish this sentence for me, to me, Matt Doyle, company is.
A breakthrough. It's a breakthrough for me. I think I really relaxed into myself as an artist. And I know I've had a lot of friends tell me that as well. So it's a breakthrough, because I think there were a lot of fears and angers and frustrations with the industry and all sorts of things that build over time that I was able to really release in that, because I trusted the piece and the work and the people around me. So that was a massive breakthrough for me, just to be able to love what I was doing and trust that and have it turn into what it turned into. That's the only reason that I got to stand on that stage and accept that Tony, is because I trusted the piece and the people around me. So that was a breakthrough for me, I think.
Matt Doyle, thank you for being on And the Award Goes to You Today. What a pleasure to get to talk to you today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful. Thank you.
And the Tony Goes To is produced by Alan Seals for the Broadway Podcast Network. The music and lyrics for the theme song were written by Georgia Famusa. Theme song orchestration by Alexander Sage Oyen. Episodes are edited by Derek Gunther. Thank you to Parody Bill for the graphics. And please don't forget to go to the iTunes show page and rate and review the show.
Thanks for listening. Excerpt from the Tony Awards used with permission of Tony Awards Productions.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.